we are live, Jimmy D and the Wolf. We are trying to get our guest on, but technical difficulties. Fedge is supposed to join us today and trying to get him in. I don't know. Technology, you know.
Yeah, he said he's in the guest room.
Yeah, that's what he told me, but I don't see him. So
maybe we have rooms we don't know about.
Could be. Well, I'm
watching. This is bigger than we thought. It is the internet. It's a pretty big place.
Pretty big place. You know, the thing I think about, you know, everybody's creating content and it gets more and more. I mean, this is not really related to the internet, but it is somewhat. A lot of people store their stuff on cloud-based and, you know, more content is being created every day, and it's getting to be higher resolution. You know, you got 4K and 5K, higher resolution, which means more, each file is bigger, and people are taking photos and doing videos and storing them online on cloud-based. And so exponentially, I think the cloud demand for cloud storage is exploding. I haven't seen any articles on this, but I just know that that's got to be the case. I know it's exploding for me. I mean, since I started putting stuff on YouTube, the amount of files that I have. Oh, there he is. I see him. Awesome.
At hey.
Fedge.
I got to switch phones. I was sitting in the guest room, I think, from the last podcast. It looked like.
Oh, did I send you? I may have sent you the wrong one, buddy. My apologies.
Maybe you sent me the one from last time. It's all right. I have those two phones, like I was telling you about, actually came in pretty handy for once.
They do, man. I got three, and I actually need all three of them.
Well, I only need half of the of one. I only need half of the two that I have.
Right.
But not too long ago, maybe a few months ago, one of my daughters went off of my plan. Oh, Joanna, when she got married. So I guess it's a little longer. Sorry, I got to get this new phone set up. It's a little shorter. So she, this ought to work good. She went off the plan, and I had this grandfathered plan. And so when I went down to three phones, it got more expensive than four
what?
Phones. It's like four phones for $10 a line and three phones for $20 a line or something. So I got the phone for like $1.08 extra a month. You know, $16 it would have been, but ended up a dollar more. So actually kind of helped out tonight. So that makes me feel good.
Well, yeah, good. I mean, yeah, I mean, the technology, everything is changing. Everybody, you know, for example, I use Quicken and QuickBooks. Well, QuickBooks for my business when I had my snack food business, which I closed down at the end of 2014. And back then you would buy the program and you would have it on your computer. And the only time you'd have to upgrade maybe is if you wanted new features or whatever, or maybe you got a newer computer and the old version didn't match with the new operating system. Now you can't even get that. It's all subscription-based. And, you know, so in six years, now we're in 2021. I mean, how so much has gone towards subscription base. And now also I was reading an article today that the UK or the European Union is passing a law that says that electronics sold in the EU have to be repairable, you know, because it used to be, you know, there were repair shops on the corner, you know, so you walk in, you know, remember here and there used to be a shop that you'd go in, the guy would repair radios and all kinds of stuff. Hola! Someone is here from Portugal.
I think that's called A&M Radio and Repair or something.
Was it?
That might have been on the end of Dakota down by Randall's.
Could have been.
Yeah, there was a couple of them, yeah, for sure.
And now they've changed it so much that they even have schematics. You can't buy the parts. And now I read an article where they're even gluing in the parts where you have to destroy the device to get even the battery out. Remember, I think the laptop that we're using has a replaceable battery, or maybe it's the first one without a battery that can take out. Remember the white one used to, you could take the Apple battery out and then they changed it where you couldn't. Now you literally can't change the battery. You have to destroy the phone to get the battery out. And so the UK is very wasteful. And the UK is trying to change that with regulations. If you're going to sell in the EU, not the UK, they're not in the EU anymore, Brexit. The EU is saying that they have to change that up. So that would be a big change, because nobody's going to make a separate model for the EU versus the rest of the world, probably. So that could radically change things. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I don't even know how to work on anything anymore. So I'm completely out of the loop with technology. I don't even know where the battery is on my phone.
Yeah.
If it breaks, I got, you know, Verizon store.
It's planned obsolescence anymore.
Yeah.
Sure.
What do you think?
They want you marching in there to get a new phone. Is what
they want. Of course.
Not a battery, probably.
I'm going to put this on screen. We have somebody from Portugal on here. Ruiz Ada. I'm probably pronouncing it correctly. We have international viewership. Can you guys see that?
Cool.
Nice.
Shows up on the deal. Thank you. Hope you're enjoying our podcast. So, well, what's new, Fedge? You haven't been on in maybe a month or two. What's going on in your world? Where are you living today? I know you're between South Dakota, Minnesota, Florida. You're gallivanting around.
Yeah, I do gallivant quite a little bit, mostly Rochester to Aberdeen these days. If I'm breathing, there's always something going on in my life. So,
right on.
Something a little bit strange happened the last couple of days. So I taped Idol, American Idol, Sunday night, and I watched it Monday. And so the little backdrop to this story is like I'm kind of been working on trying to be a little more self-aware. And about as far as I like to think I'm self-aware, but I'm probably not that much. Like probably people's perceptions of me are probably way different than my perception of myself as I mosey on my way through life. So I'd like over time to get those to match a little more. And about as far as I've gotten, I think, is that I come to realize I have a lot of blind spots. So I don't know. I don't know if that's even progress, but I suppose understanding that I have them is a little bit of progress. So I was watching Idol, and it was I don't know if you guys have seen this last Idol, American Idol edition, but it was pretty touching, pretty moving stories in there, which they sometimes can be, but I think they might have lumped a few of them together. I'm not sure. But so I got done and I was just thinking, man, I cry too much. Like I think stuff makes me cry too easy. And I do know there's times looking back over my life where that's been more of a hindrance than a help. That kind of soft, kind of emotional type part of me, aspect to me. So I was just like recovering from Idol. So I texted a friend and I said to her, I think I cried too easy. And she said, no, you don't. It's okay. It's all right. Like, so I feel like my glasses are crooked, but maybe it's just my head.
And, so what was the story in one paragraph?
Oh, just some mother daughter stories, three or four of them, just touching, coming a long way, went through some hard stuff. One towards the end, the very end, was they had been living in a car quite a bit of their life, the mom and the daughter and such. And so anyway, it's a pretty touching episode, and probably maybe I'm overreacting, but I went to bed. One of the last things I did was sent this message and went to sleep. And I woke up in the morning and it's like 9 o'clock-ish or maybe eight to nine-ish is pretty common for me to wake up and grab my phone, check a couple things. And then about the second thing on my newsfeed is Ryan Seacrest has emotional night as he watches Sunday Idol back, right? Like even Ryan Seacrest, who was hosting the episode, had an emotional time with it. So I'm like, hey, I'm only as weird as Ryan Seacrest, right? So
that's a pretty successful guy to be at the same level.
I'm like, okay, I am seeing myself the way the world is, like we're a little closer. And but this is the bigger point I want to make that comes across my life sometimes. I feel like, you know how they have these algorithms and people stuff gets sent to your phone, and like I feel like I think something and then it shows up on my phone almost. Or almost. Like I think about sending a text, or I send a text with a word in it. And that's what's kind of been on my mind today. It's like, okay, I send this text about American Idol. I wake up and was there like a, instead of an algorithm guy, a fedgorithm guy saying, hey, we got to get Ryan Seacrest up in the newsfeed, send it to that person that just talked about American Idol and his message. And it's kind of a deeper concept that's been going through my mind, but it feels like there's a lot of stuff going on there. That stuff shows up on my phone and it feels like I'm just thinking about it. I'm sure I clicked on something or I'm leaning in some topic a certain way, but today it really felt that way. Like at first I was real excited. Hey, Ryan Seacrest and I, we ticked the same way. And then I got to thinking, hey, wait a second. Why was that the first thing that showed up on my phone this morning? So I just wondered if you guys experience.
All the time. Yeah. Synchronicity. I do it. Happens almost daily anymore, man, to where you like think about somebody. And sometimes it can be somebody I haven't heard from for a long time. And I think about the person, bam, they call. You know, I believe firmly that everything exists twice. It exists first in our mind, you know, and then it exists in our reality.
And then the universe crops it out, huh?
We're sitting and existed in somebody's mind first. And so I know exactly what you're saying, man, of like you have, and when it freaks me out is when it's almost simultaneous. Of like when you can't tell what was first, if it was the thought or the event, you kind of spun around that way.
Well, my take is that the two of you are talking about slightly different things. I think Fed is talking about the almost omniscience of the internet and how they track everything we do.
Right.
You're talking about Jimmy. Yes, that does happen. You think something, you have nothing to, you think about somebody, you didn't take any action. But what I think Jeff is talking about is they are very highly sophisticated.
The algorithm.
But that's going to come to an end with Apple things, with the new 14 iOS that allows people to opt in to not share their data. You've read articles about that. You guys are familiar with that?
I'd buy less gear.
Yeah, the new operating system, the updated iOS operating system, I don't know if it's out yet or if it's almost out, but it's coming out. And there'll be an option in there where you can say, I don't want to share my private information. And Facebook supposedly is going crazy because their entire revenue stream comes from targeted advertising. And they're already sending messages because I do advertise my music on Facebook. And they're already sending a bunch of messages. Your ads are not going to perform as well because of the iOS 14 update. So it's going to radically change the business model. Now, Android hasn't done that yet that I'm aware of, and they may follow suit. But Apple is I think, still a minority of the phones, but they're definitely a major player.
Yeah.
So it'll put a huge dent in it anyway. For if 40% of the people, I'm pulling a number out of the air, 40%, I'm approximating.
Are you figuring Apple's doing that so to try to pull some people to them that aren't so interested in having all their data shared?
Well, on the face of it, they're trying to say we're the privacy people.
Okay, yeah.
That they're like
the competitive advantage.
But it is a business. And like Max Partner always used to say, it's always about the money.
Yeah.
No, that was his saying. You'd be surprised how many times during the day that phrase fits. Just going through your day, he would use that phrase half a dozen times a day, and it would fit every time he used it. It's all about the money, Tim.
Hey, Tim, I'm excited that you made a distinction between what Jimmy was saying and I was saying, because I think I've got one that fits Jimmy that just happened an hour or two before I came here to do this.
Okay.
So I stop at Casey's when I'm out and about and it's not a work day and get a glass of ice, 32 ounces, styrofoam cup, glass of ice, 27 cents. If they're real busy, they just wave me on. Nah, don't worry about it, Jeff. It's fine. But I like to get gas here because it's 3rd and Dakota down here. It's on the way to work, right? And on the way home from work. So I know everybody in there. And I was thinking, so this is right up your alley, Jimmy. I was thinking 2 or 3 days ago, 27 cents. And I was pricing out styrofoam cups at the store. It's like, that's at minimum a bunch of free ice because I'm starting to collect up these cups over time. I have a couple dozen probably around that. I'm like, that's a pretty good deal. And wouldn't you know it, today I give the 27 cents, say, hey, how's it going? She goes, hey, Jeff, just to let you know, that went up to 52 cents.
Wow. Wow.
And it's like they read my mind. I should not have been thinking of it.
Right. Should have left.
I've gone by and Casey's people are like, hey, that guy's been buying a lot of ice for 27 cents. Let's see if we, I wonder if we can get 52 out of him. This is what it feels like, I'm saying.
Sure.
And so I ran, got another quarter. She said, we'll start next time. I said, no, I gotta stay with the times. But anyway, that's probably closer to that type of a.
Yeah.
I didn't text anybody about how good a deal I was getting at the.
That's a big
price.
Go ahead, Jim.
That's a massive price hike. That's like 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But I think I'm ahead of the curve. And those cups are, I like them. I can use them around here and they don't, there'll be cockroaches and those cups left when everything's all said and done.
Right. After the nuclear fallout.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of what's been going on with me in the last couple of days. Nothing. My aunt turned 100. That's been a little bit new. 100, yeah. Last month in January, and she's since gone into hospice. So I was down there for a few days helping out, getting that situation.
Where does she live?
In Huron.
Okay.
Yeah, she lives with my mom. They're the two survivors of 7 siblings. My mom's 87. So
what order was she in?
My aunt, number 3, my mom, the youngest.
Of how many?
7.
Okay.
So my mom was the youngest, and she graduated early at 17. She was born in 33, I think, and then moved to California to live with my aunt. I worked for the Department of Navy, met my dad, was married to him for 19 years, and then they divorced in 75. She went back to live with my aunt and has been living with her ever since. They lived here for about 3 years with us in Aberdeen a few years ago, and they live in Huron now. So it's interesting. Geriatrics is not a forte of mine. I wish it was. I wish I could say it was, and I wish it was both of those, but it's not, and I can't say that it is, but I do the best I can.
You got a shout out, Fidge. Davis.
Yeah, my sister Kathy, you might remember her, Tim. She's a little close. She's an 80 grad, so she's a little closer to you.
Yeah. Give you a shout out, so I put it on the screen for you. 2019 World Series champions.
That's Nats, probably.
Who World Series champions? Who was the 2019?
And the Nationals. They live out.
Okay.
I think Woodbridge, Virginia.
You can't see the screen when I put it on there.
I can see it when you put it on. Yeah.
Okay. That would be the Nationals.
That was a pretty small. I couldn't see what team that was by looking.
I couldn't either.
They're national fans out there, those guys.
They live in D.C. or area. There, yeah.
Woodbridge, yeah. Virginia.
Okay, yeah. I used to live in Delaware, and I used to hang with people that lived in D.C. and Virginia and that area, you know, that whole mid-Atlantic seaboard. I had great memories.
Delaware's not too big, so wherever you were is probably about as far away as they are.
Right, yeah, Delaware. I mean, we used to go to beach down in – used to go to a beach down in Delaware, and there'd be a lot of people from D.C. that would come to the Delaware beach and have a beach house for the weekend, you know, and so you'd rub shoulders with a bunch of D.C. people. And,
sure. When was that? What years did you live there?
80s, in the 80s.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it was fun. So what else we got we want to talk about, guys? What else is new?
Texas just lifted all of the COVID restrictions like an hour ago.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Texas is all the way open. All the way open for business. No mask mandate. Businesses 100% open, the whole bit.
Well, I think South Dakota has been wide open forever, right? Never did any shutdown, right, Jeff?
That's correct.
You know, so we could start gigging in Texas and South Dakota.
There you go. have the numbers, did it affect the numbers at all? I mean, is it higher in South Dakota than it is anywhere else, or?
Well, I don't think testing from what I don't spend much time. The first like 6 weeks of COVID, I had a notepad and everything. Like, I can't do that. I can't do that any longer. So I kind of went the other way. But I think we had our turn at having spikes and that sort of thing, like anybody else did. One per capita, we're eighth the most in deaths per capita. So that's a little bit up there for the states. But guys, I'm so neutral on these topics like COVID and other big topics. I don't have any friends really when it comes to like, I just, both sides think I'm goofy. So I
I like it.
I did get the first, through the VA, they called me and said they had a test for me. So I got the first half of the Moderna test. And I'm thinking maybe I should just get the first half of one just to point out how centrist I am. Just get the first half of one, and then I don't have to say I got it, and I don't have to say I didn't get it. I could just sit in the middle. But, 4 weeks from the day I got it, I have to, so I got it Friday. I have to go get it.
Oh, you did? I'm not even thinking about that. I am planning on seeing my doctor for my annual checkup.
Yeah.
This month, this is March already, and ask him about getting on the schedule. I don't know if I'm in the right. I think I'm too young to be in the priority list in Tennessee yet. I don't know.
Mine came through the VA system, so they called me and said they had a test for me if I wanted it. So
you mean a vaccine? No, a test.
Vaccine, yeah. I'm sorry, vaccine. I mean to be saying,
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a serious thing. I mean, there are two young women in my church that were the leader of my church group, or the leader in the worship. I'm playing the worship band, and the lead of the vocalist side of it. There's a music director side, which is in charge of the instruments, and then there's the woman who leads the worship, I guess, and organizes the singers. And she's, 30-ish, and I think she's 31. Very fit. Used to work at a gym till just recently. I don't think any underlying conditions. And she made a comment about how she says, "Well, we have to lower the key on this song because I can't hit those high notes. Maybe in a month I can, and I don't have the lung capacity." And I asked her because I said, "What's wrong?" She says, "I'm still lingering from COVID, which she had last year." Mm-hmm. And she said, "I can't run. I can't work out." And then the other there were three vocalists. The other vocalist said, who's I think 18, she's still in high school, I think. And she said, I had it last year, in the middle of last year, and I'm still not back.
They're calling some of them long haulers or something, I think.
I've heard that term, long haulers. And as far as I can tell, I mean, I don't know these young women's medical history, underlying conditions kind of stuff, but by appearances, they certainly look, completely healthy. And yet, especially I was surprised at the teenager. She's still got lingering. So it's no joke, man. It's no joke. But I mean, small percentage of people get it,
Yeah, I'm so right up the middle. Like, you can't shut the world down, and it's a real thing. I'm just right there. Like, it's.
Well, I'm tired of not. I mean, I like to go to movies. I miss that. Like to go to Franklin. There's a dining. I mean, it's expensive, but to have them bring your food, and it's pretty decent food, yeah, while you're sitting there watching the movie, full recliner. You know, pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
Dine in. They call it the Thoroughbred 20. But only, I think, like 10 of the theaters are dine in, and some of them aren't. Some of them are, some of them aren't. My nephew got me into that. My younger nephew, Daniel, he loves to go there. He just loved to go there when he was living with me. And I would go with him, you know, a lot of times. I miss that. I do. I miss going to see, you know, dine-in movie experience.
I miss concerts, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I miss concerts too.
More than anything.
You know.
Yeah. I guess we took a lot for granted, maybe, and maybe we won't again. We probably touched on that, or you guys might have in some of your podcasts by yourselves, but.
What do you miss, Fedge?
I kind of miss garden variety church, like with the same amount of maskless people as there would have been if it hadn't come about. I go once in a while, but mostly I do have a lot of churches I get to watch online that never would have come up with the idea of putting themselves online. But it's just a little different. It's better in South Dakota, I think, than most places, but it's just
everything's
not,
up.
It's not everybody, even in South Dakota, not everybody is there that would have been.
Yeah, my church, I would say, I mean, I haven't seen the numbers. I just from the stage when I play in the worship band, which is every Sunday, pretty much. You know, I don't think I missed this. Anyway, it looks like 50% of normal. And, you know, that's hard for churches because people out of sight, out of mind, you know, people aren't attending. And then often I think the churches depend on financial support from people, you know, giving in the daily or the weekly offerings. And if people aren't there, it's easy probably then. Maybe people are still sending it in. I don't know. But I'm going to guess that 2020, the average of church financials were down from previous five-year average. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. And so stressful, you know, you don't have people coming and you don't have the financial income, you know, and
habits being broken. And here's a little bit of a tell how weird I am. I also, along with church, miss maskless poker. So there's a good combination for you. Church and gambling, you know, it's like, right. To do. So us poker players, we try to convince ourselves that's not really gambling because you have so much control over when your money goes in. But no, it's gambling.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that I did take a trip shortly after I was on out to Las Vegas just for 2 or 3 days with a couple of friends of mine, my boss and another friend of ours. And it was kind of weird. It was fine. I had good, like, got to overlook the fountains there. We stayed at Planet Hollywood, and I just played cards there in the lobby. But it was...
Oh, yeah. There used to be really cheap flights from Sioux Falls out there. Are they still have those?
Same thing with Allegiant. We just flew out of Fargo, but same thing.
It's like $59 or something, or $79?
Yeah, it wasn't much. I think it was like in the low 300s for the room and the airfare for 3 days, three nights in the motel. So, yeah. That was plenty good. And it was good to get out. The two-state region that I've been hanging out in for a long time. That was fun, but it was just different over there too. Not as creepy as some of those YouTube videos or GoPro. I think it might be a guy driving around on his bike with no, but when all of Vegas was closed down, like the first month that it was closed down, and he just ride the streets on his bike and he got a lot of views. It was just creepy. And they had to, like, I think it's on either Ari or Bellagio or some right around there. I think they're very close, right across the street from each other. But in that area, they had to weld hunks of metal onto the doors because they didn't have locks because they never planned to ever.
Wow. Wow. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
It never locked it.
Yeah. So it wasn't that bad, but it was a lot of restaurants with 80% of their tables piled up in the corner, kind of stuff like that.
Yeah, I think restaurants were hit the hardest. Restaurants and bars, music venues.
Yeah. Hey, different subject, but I was, one thing came across in the last week was, I came across a story of a guy that was wrongfully convicted in 1986, even spent just about 30 years in jail out of Alabama, Anthony Ray Hinton. I guess he has a book out. It's on Oprah's, read list. So that got me thinking a little bit about how much I whine about things in my life I wish were different. And
well, like
that. After about year three, he said he decided he was just going to be joyful and kind of try to minister to the other inmates on death row and such. You know.
Well, you know,
he was kind of framed in a way.
Yeah, well, there's a story on Netflix now of a documentary of something that happened around 2003 or so. I can't remember if it was called Long Shot or something like that. Or it's about a guy who was Hispanic, lived in kind of the projects. His brother was a banger, a lot of bangers in L.A., and gang in a gang. And there was a woman who had saw a shooting by one of the gang members, and she was going to testify, and she was murdered on the street. And the people who described the murderer, he looked similar. He had, his head was shaved, he had a goatee, he was about the right age, and his brother was in that gang. So the prosecutors, they actually were forced later on. They actually did some dirty. I mean, you don't, not the prosecutors, the cops. The cops were actually reprimanded and actually were fired eventually. But they did some. Have you ever seen Making of a Murderer? That show on Netflix. I'm digressing a little bit. It's about they got a kid to confess. I mean, they get you in the room. And they can, you know, especially some of these people are maybe their wits, they're below average IQ, and they manipulate them. The lawyers are present. They can get them to admit the stuff. And Making of a Murderer, they got this kid who was 17. He really didn't even understand. Actually, when it was all done, he said, "Can I go home now?" And he had just confessed to a murder. Anyway, that was a digression. So yeah. They got the bystanders were saying that he was the guy, and they literally they had a paper lineup of a bunch of pictures, and they circled this guy's picture. It's like, okay, who did you see? Who did you see? And the guy they wanted to frame, his picture was circled. I'm like, that's really neutral there, right, cops? And so he said, I was at the Dodger Stadium. I was watching the Dodgers play. And they says, well, can you prove it? He says, how can I prove it? I got the ticket stubs. That's not enough. And he said, well, there was, they were shooting some kind of a special show. I don't know what it was, right in my section. And so he had a pit bull defending attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy went and researched. He went to talk to the general counsel at the Dodger Stadium, or the Dodgers general counsel, got this guy to get on board. It's a public service thing. And they said, well, we did have this TV crew shooting, and they were shooting for, I don't know if you've ever seen the show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. The guy who did all the Seinfeld, he's really the guy behind all the Seinfeld. I can't remember his name. The comedian, he's a funny guy, balding Jewish guy.
Not Larry David or?
Larry David, yeah. Larry David show. Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And they were filming an episode where he was literally at the show. And so his defending attorney goes and looks at all the footage they had. They used just some of it for the show, looking for his client. And lo and behold, he was on there a couple times with the timestamp. And they demonstrated that he was definitely there. Well, the murder happened at like 10:30. The game got over about 9:30, 10 o'clock. He still would have had enough time. So they proved that he was actually there. But they said, well, he's did enough time to leave and go and shoot the person. So then they went and got his cell phone records and pinged him. You know, you can see what towers he was at. And he made a call home. And he had his daughter there, his five-year-old daughter. And she was on stand testifying. They asked her questions. What did your dad get you? And then they show the camera. He's in chains in the orange suit. And he's got chains. And he's listening to his daughter testify. He is crying. I mean, it was moving. I cried. I mean, because it was like his daughter is on the stand. She doesn't know what's going on. And bottom line, he got off. He got off because they pinged his – he called his wife, who was at home, at like 10:10. And it showed that he was still at the stadium because he was getting some things for her or whatever. And there was no way physically that he could have got across town and done the murder in 20 minutes. So he got off. And he was in prison for like 6 months, and he said that was pure hell alone. Yeah. And he said, what are the – and Larry David, of course, likes to say, yeah, I tell everybody at parties that I got a guy off for murder. You know, Larry David, can you imagine him playing it up? They interviewed him for this documentary. He's funny. He's playing it up. Yeah, we got this guy off for murder – or falsely accused of murder. So the point is – we don't understand. I mean, as a middle class white American, we don't understand what it's like to be implicated just because you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Maybe you have the wrong income,
Right.
Wrong ethnicity. Yeah.
It doesn't really matter why. I think the point I was making to myself, I mean, it does matter why on a whole another reason, if that's happening just because of any demographic reason, but just for the case that they want to wrap up a case or the let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say the prosecutors are just convinced of it. So they try to make it happen because they're convinced it happened, whatever, which is the best case.
Well, prosecutors, it's like you give them a call. I mean, they want to get a conviction.
Yeah.
They get so many convictions, they can go on to private big bucks.
Yeah, as it's generally said, my ex-partner was gotten caught, and he was guilty, actually, but the guy said, well, these prosecutors, they get roughly 12 convictions, 12, 15, especially if they're good ones, they want big ones, they will use that to get a cushy job in private practice. They want to get their ticket punch as soon as possible because you're not making much money as a prosecutor, so it's all about the money. Yeah. Had to fit that one in again.
That's a theme of the night. Anyway, it came across my mind. I don't think I do very like it makes me really try to feel like being a little bit less of a whiner about my own life, really, when I hear stuff like that and how cool of a guy that is now, that he comes out now and things he's doing and just how he got himself. He said the first 3 years he was kind of a stick in the mud, but then he said, I must be here for some reason, stuck here. And he just looked for the reasons that were around him. But I don't know.
Did finally get out. He got exonerated, probably.
Yeah, 2015 he did. Yeah.
There's a series on Netflix that of these people being exonerated. I mean, rape kits where they didn't have the DNA testing. And apparently they can still test it. I mean, I know how far back it goes. But there's a whole bunch of people being exonerated because they've gone back and done DNA testing that they didn't have the technology to do it when they were convicted.
I think in the last two decades or three, there's been 152 from death row that have been exonerated off of death row.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder about our judicial system. It's stacked against, if you're lower income, it's stacked against you. On the other side, there was a one I just watched. It's about, because I love art, especially classical art. Like Van Gogh's my favorite guy. And there was a show that is on Netflix now. I don't remember what it's called, but it's about the biggest art scam in the history of the U.S. anyway. And it happened. It was recent. I kind of remember when it was in the news. And it was 2016 when it was going on. That's like 5 years ago. And it was over $80 million worth of paintings. They were all abstract expressionism, like Pollock, and Jackson Pollock and de Kooning and Rothko. Not a style of painting I care for, but you know, have you ever seen Pollock's? It looks like he just threw paint at the canvas. Not to demean the paintings, but these paintings, when they dug into it, and it was a Chinese math, a guy living on Long Island, he was of Chinese descent. He was a math professor, and his hobby was making copies of paintings, his hobby. And the people got into that, and it actually was not a very good scam. He used current paints when they really got deep into it and they analyzed it, and the paints that he was using weren't even available to be error correct. So really wasn't very good, very good frauds, but over $80 million for these fake paintings. The bottom line, the woman who sold it all didn't even get prosecuted. And the woman, she had a dealership. It was actually Arm & Hammer. If you've heard of Arm & Hammer, big successful industrialist. He also had a record company. It was his company. They'd been in business, I think it was called Kooning. They've been in business since before the Civil War, 160 years they've been in business. They closed now because of the scandal. It was that company, and it was Arm & Hammer's son who was the principal of it. And then this dealer, I don't remember her name. Nobody went to prison except for the woman who was selling them, who got off for time served. So she was only in prison during the time of the trial. Once the trial was over, they let her out. Now, that's white collar crime. Now, if that was lower income, they'd be in prison for the rest of their lives. You know, $80 million crime, that's pretty significant. Yeah. And there were private lawsuits that were settled out of court, 10 private lawsuits that were apparently settled out of court because Arm & Hammer's son had the money. But we don't know what they were settled for, but the amount, millions of dollars. I'm sure the people that bought the fake paintings and were angry about it got all their money back plus the damages to make it go away. So that's a difference. You know, if you have money in our criminal justice system, you know, you can do pretty well. But if you're poor, and God help you if you get caught in the jaws, you know, the legal system. So it's unfortunate.
Jim, I was going to ask you about this fake organic product. Neil, have you heard that? Or
here, I'm going to show another one here. Michael Stucker is on.
What's up, Stucker?
So thank you for joining us, Michael. So
what'd you say, Mitch? Fake organic?
Well, somebody got some commodities and ran them through, got them stamped in North Dakota about being organic. Have you heard that, Tim? Organic.
No, I haven't.
You'll have to look into that. It's millions of dollars too that the guys got for selling stuff with organic label, and they routed it through North Dakota or something, like a lot of product. And
so what kinds of products? What kind of food products was it?
I think like commodities, like crops and stuff.
Like wheat corn, and...
Kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was in that world. I was in that world. I had organic...
Yeah, I know. A couple weeks ago at Cards in Town here that I play on Wednesday nights, they were talking about it. There's a lot of farmers there that I play with in that particular game, and they were chatting it up, and I was like, so it's kind of ingenious. They got connections, and they got somebody in the Department of Agriculture was documenting stuff for these people and then selling the same exact thing to people with a way higher price tag.
So the person in the North Dakota Department of Ag was in on it, is what you're saying.
Somebody that worked there.
Yeah, somebody who worked for the North Dakota Department of Ag.
Or the section of department. Somebody in the government was helping out, I guess, according to these guys. I'd heard it on the news, and they kind of elaborated on it, but I didn't understand too much of it, and I thought I'd ask you, but you haven't heard of it, so probably have to do some research on it. But you'll be intrigued with it. It's the same thing with the paint, only they used regular commodity crops and ran it through and sold them out the other side as organic. And I was like, wow. How are the people that ate that stuff doing? Like, that thought it was organic.
Man, you could make money doing that because organic was typically three times the cost.
I know. And then the damages are all in the mind almost because, I mean, you remember like George on Seinfeld said, if you believe it, then it's not a lie. So if you thought it was organic when you ate it, then it's probably is organic.
Oh, we're going to have a lot of haters now. Organic believers.
No, I'm all for it because the process to make it organic is quite exclusive. That's the point of the whole thing. So I'm not bashing that at all. I'm just saying it's a pretty crafty idea in that who is the person that's going to come looking for you? The person that bought a couple pounds of the product on the shelf is not going to hunt you down. It's going to have to be somebody must have stumbled on it in the government track and brought it to light. But it's kind of like the painting people, those people are a lot more likely to figure out they got hoaxed than the people that are eating something that's supposed to have been organic.
And right. Yeah, because the evidence is gone. You've eaten it, you know?
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Whereas the painting, you know, I mean, you can analyze it and say, hey, the paint used in this wasn't developed in 1970 and Pollock died in 1959 in a car crash. So there's no way that's the real Pollock.
Yeah,
and there were so many warning flags on that one. I mean, if you're not interested in art, these were paintings that there was no provenance on that nobody had ever seen these paintings. They were in the style of those artists, but these specific works were supposedly bought directly from his studio when he was poor. And apparently that was true. Those guys were starving artists when they were alive.
Right, right.
You could have easily purchased from them. I mean, my number one guy, Van Gogh, he sold one painting in his lifetime. I mean, if it wasn't for his brother, Theo, he would have died of starvation. So that's very workable when this person bought it and it was kept in a private. And no, the story was that it was kept in a private collection and nobody had ever heard of it. And all of a sudden now it resurfaces 70 years later, 60 years later. And so, you know, that was one of the big red flags. But everybody went along with it. They call it cognitive dissonance. Everybody wanted to believe that these were new masters that were found. And everybody just went along. There were a lot of red flags, but people explained them away. You know, so I was thinking about our willingness to ignore. Even when you're talking about millions of dollars, people are willing to ignore, you know, want to believe.
They can convince themselves because if they get them and they're real, then they'll, in this amount of years, they're worth this much more.
And they were being sold below the market because the guy who painted them was selling them for like hundreds of dollars. And they would sell them to the gallery for like under $1,800,000. And the gallery would sell them for $20,000.
Yeah, like mortgages.
The artist, he goes to a showing. And he sees one of his paintings. He recognizes one of his paintings and he sees it on the wall and he sees the price tag of like $20 million. And he calls up the woman who was the go-between between the studio and him. We have to talk. I need to get paid more. He's back in Shanghai and they went and found him and tried to interview him and he didn't want to talk to him. China's not going to extradite him. So he got off. He fled to Shanghai. He's a Chinese nationalist. So nobody really went to jail. Well, nobody was really hurt. I mean, these are all multimillionaires, but if you spend $20 million on a painting, you're worth a lot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably not taking a line of credit out to buy that painting, I suppose. let's see. Oh, I know one thing I was going to mention. Chris Paul, he wins everywhere he goes. You know, do you ever notice that? Like, I didn't notice it, but I heard him talking about it the last few weeks. He's in Phoenix now. They're 22-11.
Well, that Devin Booker guy is something else. And then they got some good players there.
Well, even last year, they stripped everybody away from OKC. They still won. They had Chris Paul. I think it was Chris Paul. He went back to OKC. Went to OKC. Everywhere he goes now, they don't win. You know, they haven't won championships and stuff, but they were good in Houston. They're good in not San Diego Clippers. That's dating me. Los Angeles Clippers. What is it, the 70s, early 80s? Well, at least I didn't say the Buffalo Braves. That's what the Clippers used to be.
Well, the East is a mess. I mean, there's so many teams blocked. The Celtics are in there, and a bunch of other teams blocked in the middle there. Yeah. The Celtics, I think, sixth in the league. How are the Pacers doing? Are the, I think the Pacers
not well? They're not very good.
Miami's gelling up again. Jimmy Butler's back, and they're playing back like a regular team. But Nets are gelling. They're going to be real good. The Nets are playing really good basketball pretty quickly.
And the Bucks, so. The Nets, and the Sixers are going to be three, yeah. The top three. They're going to ball three. Going to be awesome. Going to be amazing.
There's a lot of good teams, but you know, that's good because the Timberwolves, I think, the worst record in the league now. Something like that. 7-28, 7-29 or something. But
is the big guy still there, Towns, with the hyphenated last name?
Yeah.
He's gone?
No, he's there still.
Still there.
But he's
gonna be there his entire career? Wow.
Well, he doesn't run with very good posture. He's kind of lazy, if you ask me. Like, he just.
Well, Butler hated him. Butler was there, just hated him. No effort. You know, he's a big. But I remember seeing once I went to see a Timberwolves game, and because nobody goes, I got a seat on the middle. I was going to say 50-yard line, but right at midpoint, like two rows in. Yeah. And I remember my takeaway was how small they made that court look. I mean, those big men out there in that tiny little court, especially Towns.
Yeah.
Such a big man.
He's a good guy, yeah.
And I was like, you know, when you're only that close, these guys, I mean, they make it seem like they're playing on a court about as big as this book, you know.
Yeah.
They make it so tiny, you know. Take off of the midcourt at the free throw line and yeah.
Big kids, big people for sure.
Jimmy, you got any closing words of wisdom before we close it out?
Well, just take care of each other. That's the best thing I know to say.
Those are great closing words.
How's everything in Indiana?
Things are great, man.
Is it do you guys get to eat there and stuff, or I mean out in the town, or?
Dude, it's beautiful here right now. It was 50 degrees today and it was sunny. Beautiful.
Yeah, I see on my on the Flex there, got up to 63 this afternoon when I was out messing around. So that felt really nice. I don't know how long it'll last.
Balmy.
Huh? Balmy. Yeah, I felt balmy, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, do you have restaurants? Do you get to go eat in restaurants and stuff like that?
Yeah, we're at like 80% capacity.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty nice.
It's, you know, it's a red state. So they've tried to stay they've kind of bucked it as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I might see back to that, I guess, close out with that. But I don't know if there was a good strategy. There's not really a good strategy for these kind of things. There's probably better ones, but kind of, I guess, every so often in human, of course, of humankind, these kind of things come around, I guess.
Yeah, I would have hated to have been a politician in charge of deciding you're going to shut down and ruin the economy, or you're going to make more people die. You know, it was an intractable problem. You know, try to get people to wear masks, and people don't want to wear masks. It's my freedom. I mean, I'm glad I'm not in politics on that one. I'll tell you that.
It's certainly shined a spotlight on how fragile the whole thing is, from top to bottom.
From top to bottom. And how fragile I think our infrastructure is. I mean, look what happened in Texas. We don't really, and that could happen. I'm literally considering getting, I was always thinking about getting a generator that was powered in natural gas, because I don't think, I live in a development, I don't think I could put a big propane tank in my backyard. I know the HOA would not approve that. So you have to rely on natural gas. Well, the power goes out, that natural gas isn't gonna come. So now I'm seriously considering getting solar. And then Elon Musk is marketing his batteries for his cars to go as a backup. I don't know how many days use. Like, if you could have a battery backup that kept charge from when it was, you know, always kept charged, upcharged, and then if you could have a week, you know, you shut down things you don't need, and you had a week's worth of supply, and then the solar would replenish it. Have a solar. I mean, I'm seriously thinking about getting that. because in the 3 years I've been here, there have been three multi-day outages so far, and it's only going to get more, I believe.
Yeah, I'm a little bit cloudy on that whole Texas thing, that ERCON or whatever they call that. Did they just kind of go self-contained, Texas as a state?
Based on what I read, I mean, and probably don't have time to go into it, but based on what I read is they did not force to, in a paragraph summary, Texas went all about number one goal, cheapest electrical. So they did not force any suppliers to have backups, to winterize any costs that did not relate to developing power that could be sold. You did not have to do. Let the free market dictate. And so people didn't take precautions, and everything just got overwhelmed, and pipes froze, because there were no backup sources required, like every other state, or almost every other state, is more about continuity of supply than cheapest power. And so Texas, you know, all about, you know, they're kind of Wild West there. They're wide open markets, just let the market decide. And apparently the power is very cheap, but there was no regulation requiring power suppliers to have backup. Sorry?
Like no worst case scenario stuff or.
Yeah. Just letting the free market take it. And apparently they were warned about this, but nobody paid any attention, because if it's a free market and everybody's trying to make the most money and produce the most and get the most money, nobody's going to spend money that is not required by regulation. So now I think they're relooking at that. You know, we learn from our mistakes, hopefully.
Sure. Up in Huron, I was up there, they had rolling blackouts just a couple of days for an hour and a half, I think, at my mom and my aunt's house. So I didn't know until the first one hit. Then I started kind of trying to do some research why it might be happening. And then I learned about what I'm telling you I know now, which isn't a lot, but enough to know that the electricity was going to go back on. They were just picking times a day in parts of towns, different parts of different towns, to save a little bit. So that's what kind of got me more interested than I might have been. But then once I did that, I quickly found out how big of a deal it was for those that are down there. Still is. So it's 5 degrees in Houston and your pipes are breaking and you don't have electricity in the city of Houston, Texas. That's
pretty serious, yeah.
That's no fun.
Well, we're about almost 20 minutes over our average, so maybe we should call it.
Okay.
Peace.
We don't want the tail turning into a pumpkin.
See you guys later.
Bye, Tim. Bye, Jimmy.
See you, buddy.